In other news, Congress has rewritten the rules of domestic surveillance. The Bush administration sought broad new powers to wiretap Americans they believe are talking with terrorism suspects overseas. And earlier this month, the democratically controlled House and Senate took one look at the administration's wish list and passed it nearly word for word. Joby Warrick, a staff writer for The Washington Post, has been covering the story. He says there's a big difference in what intelligence agencies could do before this bill passed and what they can do now.
In the past, any contact that involved a person who was in the United States required a warrant. Now, as long as one of the parties is overseas and the person who happens to be in the United States isn't a target of the investigation, then surveillance is allowed without a warrant.
So why this? Why now? What happened to precipitate this bill?
Well, there has been some growing concern among intelligence officials about sort of a lack of capability to quickly intercept calls that may have to do with terrorism activity. There was a secret court ruling by a court known as FISA back in the spring of this year, which stopped or prohibited some of the activities that had been going on up to that time and told the intelligence community, you have to get warrants to continue to intercept these calls. And so as a result of that, there was an enormous backlog in the number of warrants that were being requested, and there's a lot of paperwork and man hours involved in trying to obtain these warrants. And so the intelligence officials were telling us that they really were not able to do their work as effectively before, and it was creating a true crisis in terms of being able to figure out what Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups were up to.
So one of your stories outlines a frenzied back and forth between congressional Democrats and the president's new intelligence chief over what would and wouldn't be allowed in the bill. What were the biggest differences in their positions?
Well, some of them seem quite subtle to those of us on the outside, but there were, for example, there was the Democratic version of this bill held that the only surveillance permitted would have to involve someone who is suspected of terrorism. So in other words, the target had to be a suspected terrorist. And the intelligence community insisted on a much broader definition in which any kind of foreign intelligence collection was allowed without any kind of warrant whatsoever. And that's the view that ultimately prevailed in the legislation that went through Congress.
So although the legislation went through and congressional Democrats by and large don't seem happy about it, there is a catch in the bill, the expiration date. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's right. There's a built-in sunset to this law, which is 180 days, which means essentially in 6 months this law expires and will have to be replaced or amended. And the Democrats have plans to move forward even much quicker than that and try to fix what they see as big problems in this law and to try to come up with a compromise would be more acceptable to them and a little more protective in their view of American civil liberties.
There's been a lot of talk lately about a meeting several years ago between then White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez and then Attorney General John Ashcroft. Ashcroft was in the hospital. His deputy James Comey had refused to renew a controversial surveillance program. Gonzalez visited Ashcroft in his hospital room and is alleged to have asked him to sign off on the program himself since Comey would not. How does that program relate to the bill that just cleared Congress?
Well, there's a good bit that's unknown about that because the actual substance of that hospital conversation is not fully known. It is not known, for example, whether they were talking about a fairly narrow program, which is the terrorist surveillance program, as the president refers to it, which is just surveillance of Al-Qaeda operatives, or something much broader. And whatever the substance of the conversation was, it so upset got these Justice Department officials riled up enough that several of them threatened to resign. And exactly what they're referring to and the kinds of activities that they were concerned about, we still don't know all the details there.
So you've written about the new technology that the administration plans to use for domestic surveillance, including high-tech satellites. What exactly do they want to put into play, and what precedents would it set?
Yeah, this is very interesting. Up until now, satellites and other kinds of airborne surveillance that does routine spying on foreign targets, such as military movements, Al-Qaeda training camps, whatever these military satellites look at, that's been strictly a foreign program. So there's no use of these satellites on U.S. soil or for U.S. purposes. The only exception has been that some scientists have had access to these very sensitive, very sophisticated satellite photographs for things like creating very accurate topographic maps or examining volcanic activity, that kind of thing. And now there's a movement underway within the intelligence community to try to make some of these assets available for much broader domestic use. And this could include anything from response to a natural disaster, such as a hurricane or forest fires, to potentially law enforcement activity. So you could have a point in the near future where a state or local police department may request and receive this kind of very detailed, very sophisticated overhead surveillance data in order to pursue local criminal cases.
Well, Joby Warrick, a lot there, and definitely thank you so much for filling us in.
You're welcome.
Joby Warrick is a staff writer for The Washington Post.